Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Coming up, five teachers from the same school convicted of historic sex abuse after a listener to this programme came forward to tell his story, and we reflect on England's World Cup run. But we start this week with Friday's programme as protesters gathered to demonstrate against President Trump's visit to the UK.
The Vanessa Feltz Breakfast Show
on BBC Radio London.
President Trump and Sadiq Khan's relationship could perhaps at this point be described as a feud. During Donald Trump's interview with The Sun, he again lashed out at our mayor on crime, terrorism and not being hospitable to the president.
You have a mayor who's done a terrible job in London. I think it's too bad. I think he's done a very bad job on terrorism. I think he's done a bad job on crime, if you look. And I think he's not been hospitable to a government that's a very important government. Now, he might not like the current president, but again, it's for me, I represent the United States, but I also represent a lot of people in Europe because a lot of people from Europe are in the United States.
And joining me on the program, London's Mayor Sadiq Khan. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, you will, of course, be aware of the headlines today. Mayor Khan doesn't like me, but I say to him, you've done a terrible job on terror. I mean, he really has criticised you very personally indeed, Mayor Khan. What's your response to the president?
Well, first, I'm not going to respond to every single point President Trump makes. I mean, I think I'm going to be bigger than that. And I think what's important today and tomorrow is we're going to see over the course of the next 2 days protest today. There'll be protests against President Trump, against some of his policies and what he stands for. Tomorrow, there'll be protests from extreme far-right groups, including pro-Trump supporters. And the key thing over the course of the next 2 days is for those protests to be peaceful and good-spirited. Now, he objects to people protesting against him today, but I'd remind your listeners that actually one of the great things about our two countries is not simply the special relationship, but the rich history enshrined in our respective constitutions of freedom to protest, freedom to assemble, and freedom of speech, and we should cherish that.
You say that you're going to be bigger than responding, but surely you would want to respond to something that is so intensely personal as being told you've done a terrible job. People all over the world are going to hear the president's verdict on your mayoralty. A terrible job. He says you've done a terrible job in terms of terrorism. It's all your fault for letting too many migrants into the country, and also a terrible job on crime in London. Surely you must want to respond because you're big enough to. You really ought to, oughtn't you?
Well, in relation to terrorism, Vanessa, we as a city suffered these terrible attacks last year. 14 people lost their lives, and they're still in our thoughts and prayers. Manchester also suffered a horrible terror attack. 22 people died there. In Berlin, 12 died. Nice also suffered a terror attack. 84 died. Brussels, 32 people, innocent people, lost their lives as well. Paris, 130 people. It's for President Trump to explain why he singles out the mayor of London being responsible for the attacks in London and not any other mayor or any other leader. I'm quite clear in my mind. I was really comforted, as indeed Londoners were, when we had messages of support, solidarity and love from around the world, including from America and Americans. And people will see this for what it is.
When you say, why does he single out the mayor of London? I mean, you leave the question unanswered. So I'm going to give you some words and see if you agree with them or not. Do you think he chooses you, Mayor Sadiq Khan, to criticise in this personal and vehement and very trenchant way, in a way that I think most professionals such as yourself would find wildly offensive? Does he criticise you because you're Muslim? Do you think he's Islamophobic and he's singling you out for that reason?
It's not for me to analyse or give a motive to what he says. It's for others to do that, and for President Trump to be asked this question. I'm sure our Prime Minister, when she meets with him today, will be making the point to the President that, hold on a sec, we suffered attacks in Manchester as well. I'm sure she'll say to him, why have you singled out the Mayor of London, not, for example, and he's an excellent mayor, by the way, the Mayor of Manchester? And that's what you'd hope a leader who's got confidence in herself and her country would do with a leader of a country with whom we have a special relationship.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, June 15th. Wow, that is really loud. Sunday, June 15th, 2018. So I have been told this is our once a month global Sunday talk on racism, white supremacy. We do this every third Sunday of the month. We've been doing this since 2015, 3 years. I think it's important. Racism, white supremacy is not a problem that is isolated to one specific location on the planet. I think frequently we non-white people talk about racism, white supremacy as though it is just a problem in the southern part of the United States or South Africa, maybe a few other locations, but by and large, you can run away. There's some place on the planet that you can go to get away from the problem of whites. That is simply not true. Racism, white supremacy is a global problem, thus the broadcast. I always think it's super informative to speak with non-white people in different parts of the planet, just to hear their perspective, see similarities in how whites practice racism, differences. They don't operate the plantation the same everywhere you happen to be. Hopefully getting this information will help us exponentially in solving this problem, like immediately. That said, wow, so many things to discuss. Our president, Donald J. Trump, was hanging out in the UK this week. I thought it would be grand because we have had a healthy participation from our UK listeners over the years to hear, get some of their thoughts on the visit and some of the major themes that were brought up. They had protesters out with their baby Donald Trump to make it seem like there were lots of whites who were angry with him. And they were bringing up all the issues that you hear whites who are protesting and say they don't like President Trump, all of those issues, the border and immigration, the way that he talks about people, it's total disgrace. Would love to hear thoughts from our UK listeners and folks in period from around the world, and certainly our listeners in the States. If you want to take advantage and ask questions, time where you can speak with, converse with non-white people in different parts of the globe, please dial in the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I'll give out the number a few more times as we proceed. With that, folks that are with us right now, and I'm going to be trying to add some of our other international listeners as we continue, but at least the folks that are with us right now. Number one, she's been with us many times before, has been a guest on the program, operates her own podcast with highly constructive information about the system of racism, white supremacy, the lovely June Allen. You can visit her website, juneallen.net. June Allen, you're with us?
Yes, greetings, Gus. Greetings. Good to be here. Good to be on the show. Just for those of you that don't know me, I not only, support the Carols with what Gus has been doing, but also I also help people to understand the internal impact of racism. So I teach like racial sobriety and just to help people to understand how to deal with self-hate and stuff like that. So yeah, it's good to be here, Gus. It's good to be supporting the cause, and I look forward to catching up with you today, and everyone else is going to be on the show as well.
Always a pleasure to speak with you. JuneAllen.net. JuneAllen.net. Also joining on JuneAllen.net, June Allen joining us live from the UK. Our next guest, I believe I got the message correct, joining us from the continent, Nigeria specifically. Is that accurate? Frank with us once again. He's been on. From Nigeria.
Yeah, that's correct.
Wowee.
Yes, good evening. Good evening from Abuja, Nigeria.
Yeah. Wow, awesome.
Just visiting my father at the moment. So, yeah, I'm just here.
Spectacular. How long have you been there?
I arrived in June, on the 18th of June. I'm going to be here till at least middle of August. So I'm going to be here for a while.
Nice, nice. Envious, very, very envious. I hope you soak it in. The family is doing great. That is highly constructive, highly constructive.
Yeah.
Let's see. First thing, well, I will certainly give you all the opportunity if there are things that you all are focused on or questions or just topics that you think we should be aware of. But I wanted to start with the audio clip that we began. Our president, Donald J. Trump, hanging out in the UK this week. He met with Prime Minister Theresa May. The audio clip that you heard, he was critical of Mayor Sadiq Khan, which I think is important because yesterday on the compensatory call-in, we had the segment where it's a prosecutor, Salem, I think that's how you say it. It's a peculiar last name, but this white man in California, he had made all these terroristic threats against Congresswoman Maxine Waters, saying that she was ghetto and why hasn't she been shot, posted this publicly. Now he's been suspended, not terminated, not fired, of course. But I think it's important because this attack of non-white elected officials, that was a key aspect of the white terrorism during the late 19th century. And many folks have compared the period that we're in now to what happened, the violence and direct white terrorism that happened then, attacking non-white elected officials, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, former President Obama, First Lady Michelle Obama, Mayor Sadiq Khan, all seems to fit the pattern. And to blame him and say, it's your fault, not Prime Minister Theresa May, the mayor, it's your fault that London, England has been susceptible to terrorism. You've let all these immigrants, non-white people in, like yourself, to come in and ruin things for the good whites, the good Brits over here. It's your fault. Very similar to the racist rhetoric we've heard on this side. But I'll start with June, since you're there. What's what are your thoughts on what you've heard with the visit of President Trump to your part of the world?
Yeah, it's been a mixture of different things, actually. I thought it was interesting, you know, just kind of listening to the sort of codified conversation, as Neely Fuller would say, around him saying about how much he loves Europe and how, you know, Britain's quote unquote losing its culture by letting the immigrants and stuff in. And it's just so obvious now what he's trying to say. You know, he's a blatant white supremacist, and he's just come over and just made it very, very clear what his agenda is. And like what you said about, you know, Sadiq Khan and the audio clip and everything, you know, what's that got to do with Sadiq Khan? You know, there's other people that have been involved in this situation, Theresa May and the other guy in Manchester. Why is he singling out Sadiq Khan? And Theresa May's not going to call him on it. I'd be very, very surprised if she said anything to him about it. There's been no comeback on, not that we've heard anyway, that she, you know, about the things that he said about her in the newspaper. An interview that he did with The Sun. Apparently he's been backtracking to now saying he didn't say it and all the rest of it. So he just... he can't be trusted. He says all these things. And, he's just got one agenda. He's just got one agenda. And that is so clear. The other thing that I would say about this visit is I thought it was really interesting that so many people have been on the marches. And, you know, a lot of these white liberals are saying, you know, how much they hate him and how the Queen, you know, the Queen was right not to give him a state visit, and the, you know, all the rest of it, and you know, almost like saying that, you know, the Queen is kind of not like him. But my thing is, what I was saying to people is, it's a complete hypocrisy, because at the end of the day, the monarchy is an establishment that sanctioned the murder and rape and whatever of millions of people. They've made no amends. They've not made any attempts at recompense or anything like that with the people that they murder and continue to abuse globally because of the system. And yet they're trying to distance themselves from Donald Trump. And I think that it's all the same. It's just that, you know, one of them is just a bit more kind of trying to be a bit more, you know, PC, I suppose, than the other one. But as far as I'm concerned, it's all the same thing. It's all the same thing. And I'm not falling for it. They're trying to make out that the Queen is sort of, you know, she's decent and she doesn't want to see Donald Trump, and don't give her a state visit. Let's just let him have tea for half an hour. And, oh, we don't want that sort. We don't want his kind. As far as I'm concerned, the establishment are just as bad as Donald Trump, because they, you know, their behaviour is not conducive to anything different that he's done. Just more covert in a way today. It's just more covert today, but it's the same thing. So yeah, I think it's interesting that he's been over here, you know, causing a havoc and all the rest of it. But he's just behaving. He's not behaving any other way than what I expected. I'm not surprised at his behaviour, and also just kind of understanding, you know, Dr. Wilson's work and Neely Fuller's work. It's just, you know, he's just shown up exactly as predicted. So I'm not surprised. Yeah, I just find it interesting that there's so many white people that are trying to, you know, talk about Donald Trump being really terrible or whatever. But, you know, at the end of the day, they still support the Queen, which means they still support white supremacy as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on it.
When I saw the protests, and you can see the videos, they had spent who knows how much money, euros, to have this massive float with a baby of Donald Trump in a diaper and him raging and what have you. That money they could have gave that to the Grenfell Tower victims or the Windrush victims. They could have hooked them up. Here's a new flat for you. We know it's been a tough year. Nah, we don't want to do that. We want to go out and shake our fist at that no good Yankee president, Donald Trump, to come over here and talk bad about our pride. Get out of here. It reminded me of, there's a whole industry of whites. That's what they do. Make it seem that they are not racist. I mean, I cannot emphasize, like, that is hugely important to make it seem like there are some whites who are not. Even before I forget, from that interview, Vanessa Bryan, I believe, is the suspected racist white woman's name, who was interviewing Sadiq Khan. And I thought she did many things in that exchange that were racist and trying to put words in his mouth, as they say, to make him say, don't you think Donald Trump is an Islamophobic? Don't you think Donald Trump, and she didn't say racist. That wasn't one of the accusations. Do you think he was being racist, practicing white supremacy, maybe, by trying to slander you and call you all these names? She didn't ask him that, just Islamophobic. But anyway, the interview, her not using the term racism, I thought, was extremely important. And I think in general, just when you have white people who try to give this perception or idea that we are not racist, that has so much value for the system of white supremacy. It cannot be that all of the white people are racist. It can't be that you just have different forms of how we want to go out managing the plantation globally. It can't be that. It's got to be no. Donald Trump is racist. Jeremy Corbyn is racist. The rest of us, we are cool. I voted for Sadiq Khan, and if I could have, I would have voted for Barack Obama for a third term or Hillary Clinton. You know, all of that is nonsense. Worldwide, just that's what stood out to me more than anything. Worldwide, the value of not all white people are racist. Did you want to comment, June?
No, just like everything that you just said just made complete sense. Like, I so agree, and I think that that's where white supremacy can be quite dangerous to people, because on the surface it looks like, you know, well, all of these people are really against Trump. You know, where were all these people protesting? And like you said, you know, why wasn't anyone saying any of this stuff when the Windrush thing happened? I know there were some people that were kind of, you know, speaking up about it, but what's happened with all of those people? what, like, we're not hearing about what's happened to all of those people. Have those people been, are they allowed to come back in the country or what? So it's almost like, and I also feel that because Donald Trump is obviously his behavior around, you know, sexism and all of that kind of stuff, that's another reason, because it affects them, because it affects white women, then they've got more reason to kind of shake their fists and say he's a terrible person. But if he was just going on about immigration and stuff, maybe they wouldn't be, you know, they wouldn't be as riled up and stuff about it, you know, because they don't have the same, they don't have the same level of empathy. I mean, the biggest thing that I saw, obviously, with all the, you know, the stuff at the border when the families were being separated and all that, that's kind of like the first time I've seen people really kind of, you know, rally up against him and get really upset about that, you know, in that respect. But, you know, when it comes to us, they just don't have it's almost like they're missing the empathy gene. They just shut down. So I don't buy it. I really don't buy it, because at the end of the day, it's white supremacy, and, you know, it's important to understand the behavior, the code conversations, and really understand what he's saying. When he's talking about Britain's losing its culture, he's talking about white people being exterminated. White people, sorry, becoming extinct. That's what he's talking about. And he's sort of talking about, you know, oh, in America and Europe, you know, we love each other. He's talking about whiteness. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about whiteness. He's not including the people that, you know, the immigrants and stuff that went over. He's not, you know, I don't know. It's just important to, for me, it's important for me to be able to understand it for what it is, and understand that, you know, he is doing what he's doing because he's got an agenda. And, you know, when I see all this stuff playing itself out, my responsibility is to make sure that I take care of the internal impact that it has on me. How does it make me feel about my self-esteem? How does it make me feel about how I treat other black people? You know, that's kind of what I need to deal with. I need to deal with and make sure that I'm not internalizing his nonsense. His nonsense and his behavior is his business, you know, and I've got to not just him personally. I'm talking about the impact that he has, you know, on the system globally. And I think that's really important, because we can't fight white supremacy, you know, with low self-esteem. We have to have, you know, good self-esteem in order to, you know, to do the counter-racist work, to do the activist work. You've got to be strong. You've got to have good boundaries. It's so important. But, you know, this piece of the puzzle and understanding how it operates and understanding the code words and understanding that, you know, just because 250,000 white people are marching in London, that, what, you know, that white supremacy somehow doesn't exist and that racism doesn't exist in London. It absolutely 100% does. And I think it's important for people to understand, you know, to really, you know, take, I'm not saying that, you know, people aren't, you know, not allowed to march or whatever, but it's just, you've got to look at these things, you know, and understand how the system operates, you know. But I understand it, so I can look at it and see it for what it is. I don't sort of, you know, I don't have my kumbaya glasses on about these things, you know, and I think it's important to stay vigilant about what this stuff means.
Didn't mean to cut you there, sorry.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
Context of White Supremacy. June Allen joining us live from England. Really important point, I think. Dr. Welsing would agree. Black self-respect, having that high self-esteem, very important. If we're going to do the cosmic work, that's what she called it, the cosmic work of replacing white supremacy with justice. I wanted to include Frank on the discussion. I don't even know if this is registered, if this is news or, you know, worthy of discussion in your part of the world. But before I asked him, since Dr. Welsing's name has been invoked, and there has been so much talk in Europe, what they call Europe, this part of the world, about white genetic annihilation, there not being enough whites, all of these non-whites coming into England, the United States, other areas with lots of whites coming in here. And, you know, we're really worried, lots of anxiety about this. The symbolism of them having a white baby to portray Donald Trump where you've had all this talk about white fertility and the difficulty of getting white babies, producing white babies and in vitro fertilization, all of that talk to have a huge white baby floating down the streets of London, allegedly in protest. Like, that is interesting. Dr. Welsing does encourage us to interrogate symbols. That is one I'd be curious to get her thoughts. The grandsister, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. But Frank, live in Nigeria, I am not sure. Did this register? Were you paying attention to this? Any thoughts on President Trump's visit to London?
Okay, so in terms of the country in general, not really, because you know we have our own like issues to deal with here, and like at the moment the biggest issue is was an election that happened yesterday for the governorship of a state in the southwest region of the country, and there was a lot of rigging of ballot boxes, and there was a lot of violence as well. I think people were kind of like, no one was killed, but there was a lot of bloodshed nonetheless. So that has been like in the news quite a bit in the last sort of couple of weeks I've been here. In terms of Donald Trump, not really. Except if you watch the BBC on the cable TV channels here, then you kind of get that news. But in terms of local news, nah. For me personally, I live in the UK, and so my Facebook, my Twitter, my social media world is basically full of people in the UK, and I basically have the same thoughts on the issue as June has kind of expressed. You know, I just felt like even not being in the country at the moment, but still seeing pictures of like white people just protesting Donald Trump's visit, I just couldn't stop thinking about how the same issues they claim to be protesting against Donald Trump over, the British state also is guilty of those same issues. So whether it is mistreatment of non-white people, aka immigrants, mistreatment of women, mistreatment of like the people who are the most downtrodden in society, the UK state is guilty of that. You know, this is a time of this is a period when they're talking about how many disabled people are dying as a result of spending cuts in the UK. This is a country where Brexit just, you know, they're still dealing with the issue of Brexit, you know, which was a kind of like racist move on the part of British people. You know, this is a period where like, you know, families have been separated. You know, the Home Office will tell you, oh, you can't stay with your British family, with your British children, because they don't believe you have a right to be in the country. And then you ask them, well, this is my family, and they say to you, oh, you can still have a family from your home country. You just say to chat to them regularly via Skype. You know, this is a country that regularly breaks up black and non-white families in the name of keeping Britain safe from immigrants. You know, this is a country that rape regularly happens within immigration detention. Rape of men and women regularly happens. You know, the police brutality thing is there as well. You know, black men getting stopped and just like sexually violated by the police. It happens, you know. But these white people, they don't really see that, or at least they don't see that as something worth bringing out 250,000 people onto the streets about, because you know it's their internal problem. And you know, it's one of those things where like from their side of the fence, things are looking good for them, but over there on the other side in America, oh yeah, things are so bad and we have to protest against it. And in a way, protesting against those things that they see happening in America essentially silences the injustices that happens in their own back, and they're very, very happy with that. Yeah, I mean, I'm in a country that is still dealing with the legacy of British colonialism, British enslavement of African people. I literally spent the first week of my time in Nigeria, the first week when I arrived, just looking for old family members of mine to basically speak with them about my family's history, because I found out that my great-great-grandfather is a descendant of people from Brazil who returned, like slaves from Brazil, people, Africans who were enslaved in Brazil who then returned back to Africa, you know. So this is a legacy that we're still dealing with, you know. We still have to speak English in this country when most people, English is still our official language, when most people don't even speak English fluently. Everything is just anglicized here or Americanized. And we're still dealing with that, with all that legacy. And it's so blatant for me anyway. It's so surreal being here and seeing how the violent legacy of their presence here, both in the past and presently, still affects us so deeply. So those are my thoughts on the issue, really.
Context of white supremacy. Frank joining us live from Nigeria. Definitely appreciate your analysis. I was so eager to ask you, as someone, you've participated in this broadcast many times before, you're familiar with the counter-racist concepts laid out by Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., producejustice.com.
Yep.
Given what you started with, saying that the big news right now, the election, and there was violence, bloodshed, black people having conflict among themselves, how would you explain that to someone who says, you know, what are you all talking about? Global system of white supremacy. How is that white people's fault? Then you got Nigeria. You got a country with billion black people, like tons of black people in Nigeria. How in the world is that white's fault that black people are having bloodshed over their elections and rigging the ballot box and that sort of thing? How is, you know, racism, white supremacy to blame for that?
I mean, in response to that question, I think I would say that Nigeria is basically like South Africa, but with not enough white people around. So we have like a lot of people who don't live in like adequate housing. A lot of people who are underemployed. They're not even unemployed. They're underemployed. You know, like we have people who basically we have issues of like the police just like seeing you as a young person, simply having an iPhone, and they just come for you. They just like beat you up and they say, how did you manage to get your iPhone? And then you say to them, I paid for it with my money. And they say, no, we believe you've been involved in fraud and we're going to take your iPhone off you. Like this routinely happens. But in relation to the issues with the state in question is called Ekiti State. I always say to people that Nigeria is no real country. Nigeria is a British product. Okay, Nigeria was created in 1914. We were forcefully put together by a white man called Lord Lugard, and we were forcefully put together not for our own good, but for the swift removal of goods and other resources, our natural resources, to Britain. Okay, so that's the purpose of Nigeria being in existence. Nigeria is created for white people's enjoyment. Nigeria is created for white people's benefit. It wasn't created for our benefit. And so when we see the stuff that's happening at the moment, both the overt violence and the more and the less overt structural violence, this is a legacy of that violent creation of the country, because there are people like I belong to an ethnic group called the Yoruba ethnic group. They're Yorubas who come from Togo, who have a Togolese passport. They're Yorubas who are from the Benin Republic, you know, but ostensibly, then me and them, we're not the same people, but we have the same names. This is a legacy of European partitioning of Africa. Okay, we have a lot of even our police. Like in my language, in the Yoruba language, the word police. Sorry, the word that we use for police literally means the man with a stick. Okay. That's what it means. And the reason for that is because when the British sold the Nigerian police force, they didn't give them guns. They gave them batons. That's what they gave them. Because obviously you can't have thousands of black people running around with guns in the British colony. You can't have that. So we literally just call them people with sticks. Even though now they walk around, the standard issue weapon is an AK-47. The Nigerian police force, like they have AK-47s, like they just carry them like it's a broomstick. And all of this stuff is just a legacy of the British. And when the British left in 1960, the Americans basically took their place, you know. The Americans took their place, and the Americans are just British with a slight twang in their accent, really. As far as I'm concerned, so the British never really left us, and white people in general never really left us, unless we think that it's just white people that's the problem. At least from my own kind of view of the way things are playing out right now in my country, in Nigeria, like the Chinese are here, there are Ukrainians here, there are Arabs here, there are. All the Indians are here. Everybody just wants a piece of the pie, you know. Everybody but the black people who actually deserve to have the pie. Really, everybody else comes and they just take what they want and they just leave. And we have our leaders who are basically, a lot of people call them wealthy people. They're not wealthy. They're just like the guys who hold the door open for these parasites to come in. And take everything, you know. So and that's the basis of the violence. Nigeria is a deeply violent place. Violence is so ubiquitous. It's an everyday thing for us here. Like every day, like the amount of times I had people just swearing at me and cussing at my dad whilst we're driving for no reason at all, you know. People just want to be violent towards each other. People just throw abusive words at each other. And I'm not trying to, I mean, it's a beautiful place. I don't want to paint such a negative picture, but on a day-to-day basis, like especially in Lagos, I just came from Lagos last week. Lagos is Abuja at the moment. Abuja is calmer than Lagos. Lagos is just like, Lagos was really, really, it was deeply, it's like everybody is in a haste to die the way people drive on the road. Everybody just wants to beat the other person. Pedestrians, motorcyclists, car drivers, truckers. Literally, when I was in Lagos, the week I was in Lagos for, there was a petrol tanker. I don't know how this managed to happen, but a petrol tanker exploded on the highway, and about 100 cars got burnt, and I think about 60 people died. Like violence is like what mediates our existence with one another, especially Lagos, you know. And it's the same in Abuja as well, the capital city where I'm at the moment. You know, violence is such a, it's everywhere. It's like the air. It's like the air we breathe. It's everywhere. And this violence, the source of it is white supremacy, because Nigeria wouldn't exist as it does today with all the violence that comes with it without white supremacy. Simple, you know. But the other thing as well is like, try explaining this to an ordinary Nigerian who, you know, I'm not saying an ordinary Nigerian who hasn't had three square meals a day, you know, like I'm talking about Nigerians who are so-called educated, who are so-called rational. Many of them, they just see this type of analysis as, yeah, we're just blaming white people for no reason. And why do we keep blaming white people? The white people left 60 years ago, or maybe almost 60 years ago now, in 1960. Why do we keep talking about them? We are the source of our own problems. Look what we do to ourselves. Look how we treat ourselves. And it's true, like, we do what we do to ourselves. We have been programmed to do that to ourselves. We have been programmed to have violence as the main way of interacting with one another, you know. So, and this kind of and this doesn't just happen at the level of society in terms of, like, people to people. I remember I grew up in Lagos. I was born in Lagos. I grew up in Nigeria before coming to England when I was 15, and even the relationship between my parents and I was deeply violent as well. I was regularly beaten over random things. Same thing at school. Violence was like the mediator of our relationship. With me and my parents, with me and my teachers, with me and my friends at school, it was deeply violent. Yes, we had moments where, like, you know, we loved, you know, we showed each other love and we cared for each other. But violence was always in the air, you know. We're always one step removed from violence. And that's that. And me being here for the last sort of 3-4 weeks has kind of brought that into light a lot for me, you know. So yeah, I'm gonna stop rambling now. But that's how I would kind of take that question and respond to it. So yeah.
Context of white supremacy, live from Nigeria, Frank. Returning to the cows. Thank you kindly for the comprehensive, in-depth analysis. The man with a stick. Heard that. That is, woo, remembering World War II, they had the exact same logic. They had black people who joined the armed forces for the United States. They're overseas in Australia. They can see Japanese soldiers, see, hear them. They don't give the black soldiers guns. They give them sticks. Same logic. Can't have these niggers running around with guns. They give them sticks and send them out, you know, protect and serve. Thank you so much for sharing, especially about the everyday commonality of violence, because I absolutely think that that is a direct product, by direct design, of racism, white supremacy. I mean, you see that all over the world, a celebration of violence, but especially deliberately to have black people be violent with one another and constantly have conflict with one another. I think that's why Mr. Fuller makes it such a point of emphasis, minimizing conflict with other non-white people. That has got to be a key aspect of racism, white supremacy. And that sounds painfully familiar to the experiences of black people in the States. A lot of what you just shared in terms of being violent with one another, black people being violent with one another, being violent with one another, even within our families, parents, children, that relationship being filled with violence, even if violent communication, even if it's not physical violence per se, although that can often be a part of it as well. Violence at school. I think tons of black people. We had Asada Kirkland on the program. She talked about that, the same thing, and all of that going back to the system of white supremacy. You see, that's exactly what I said at the beginning of the program. I think this broadcast, or even beyond this broadcast, the importance of recognizing that white supremacy is a global problem, you will see a lot of the same patterns when you begin to look worldwide. This is what white supremacy produces everywhere. While Frank was informing us, sharing his views and observations about white supremacy in Nigeria, we had two of our other participants join live. One longtime investor has done extraordinary work investing just a tremendous amount of time and energy in posting archived content of the cows on YouTube, where tons of people have got access to the program who would not have heard us if it were not for his diligent efforts. Joining us live also in England. Mr. Fox, are you with us, sir?
Greetings, and I apologize. I didn't read that email in full depth. You did have a change of the time, so my apologies for coming, 45 minutes late. So I'm here. Hope you can hear me loud and clear, and I apologize once again.
No apologies needed. Glad to have you with us, sir. Happens to the best of us. Also joining us live, she has been with us many times before. Always a pleasure to have her on the program to hear her views. And also joining us from England, Mary, are you with us once again?
I am. Can you hear me?
Crystal clear, both of you.
I'm so sorry. I also thought it was 8 o'clock, and it's just a lesson to read things properly. So I apologize to everyone for being so extremely late.
No apologies needed from either of you. Gus T, yoga training, disruption of everything. I have yoga training, so had to do the program a little bit earlier so that I can get to teacher training on time. I will say one thing with yoga, that violence, they made us, as a prerequisite before we started yoga teacher training, they made us have a day where we could not view, or we were directed to not view any violent content. That meant no. And in fact, they didn't even define it after they gave us that directive. And this was before class had started, so there was no instructor to go say, oh, wait a minute. They didn't define it. And I began to think like, okay, so what do we mean when we say violent? Because I think you can be violent with speech. After that happened, I ended up just turning everything off because that was the directive. You're not supposed to have any violence, like take a total cleanse fast, if you will, from violent content. I think for counter-racist purposes, that might be important because, as was stated, we're in a planet that is just saturated with violence, and especially violence directed at Black people. I think it is very important to disconnect from that content, to get away from that content, because it has a tremendous impact on our thoughts, speech, actions, emotions, spirit, our Black mental health, our Black self-respect and self-esteem, just constantly being forced, really, to binge on all of this violent content. I'll hush with that. We'll start with Mary. You were at the epicenter of Donald Trump hanging out in your part of the world. We did ask about that at the beginning of the program. Did you have any observations or thoughts on his visit and all of the whites out in the street protesting President Trump hanging out with you all?
Yeah, he actually passed through my local area. The whole cavalcade came down the street, which is really unusual because we're not really that close to central London. And everyone was kind of amused by all of these cars of police coming down the street in the presidential car. It was a bit of overkill. But I just think that the protests are pointless. They don't actually, they don't relate to me because that's white people arguing amongst themselves. It's got nothing to do with me as a Black person because we're not heard as Black people in this country, and our viewpoints are completely irrelevant to white power. So him being here really is not my business because it's white infighting. The only way it would become my business is if the conversation was centered around what would be the end goal for Black people. I've reached a point where I'm not really concerned with other groups because they're not really concerned with what happens to us. So I just focus my energy on us and what can be done for us because, you know, if you don't take care of your own health, then you can't take care of anyone else's. But I just think the protests are, they're asinine. There's nothing that's going to be achieved. People are just taking it as a moment just to vent. But it's the group of people that are venting, as I said. To me, that's just white infighting, and it has got nothing to do with me. I mean, I know we feel the repercussions of their decisions, but imagine how ridiculous it would be to see yourself as a Black person standing in the street arguing with this man's presence. Just thinking about it, it just seems so laughable. So, I mean, from my point of view, just sit and carry on. It's just a whole load of attention seeking, and that was my observation, and there was no value to it.
White infighting. Succinct, accurate. Mr. Fox, you also at the epicenter. Any thoughts on the visit or the protests that we've seen?
I would have to concur with what was just said, because it's white infighting when it comes to the civilians, but it's just a business trip, really. Because if you look at white supremacy in the West, that is the backbone and muscle. So he's coming over to Europe to put people in line and to do business deals. So you're having a lot of these liberals marching and, you know, kicking up a fuss with people who are pro Trump, because you've seen a lot of what I've seen. I've only seen about two news segments. You've seen people who are pro Trump, meaning people who, you know, people who, white people who be classed as who practice the Jewish faith, and people who might be a part of the EDL or one of these other, you know, British national far right groups who were arguing with liberals about Donald Trump being over here. But it's just white people arguing amongst themselves, and he's coming over here to do his normal business. That's all it is. I've not paid too much attention to it. I've just seen him on the news, you know, visiting the royal family and walking ahead of the Queen, which I thought was very funny. But he's coming over here as a boss. He knows the score. He knows that, you know, the NATO and all the other, you know, racist white supremacist nations of the West need America. So he's coming over here to do business and business only. I'm just observing.
The business operations of racism, white supremacy. If you have questions, folks that are dialed in, if you want to take advantage, ask any questions, our international participants, the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you have a question. Before I get to some of the hands, I did see a report this week that there was a lot of the same sort of nonsense with the whites out protesting, that they did not support Donald Trump and, you know, we wanted our voices heard. That same sort of propaganda that there are some whites who are not racist was being used with the World Cup, because I guess the English World Cup soccer team has a sizable or significant number of non-whites on the team. They did lose this week. France won the tournament. Their team also, the France team, French team, they have a significant number of dark people, melanated players on their team. And they were saying that this was being used as another example of, wow, diversity, much like the royal wedding. This is great. Racism is on the way out. We are unifying around our little rainbow soccer team that's doing so well and almost got to the big game. Were you hearing that or seeing that sort of nonsense? Any of you all that are in the England area?
Hi, guys, it's June. I thought the World Cup thing was interesting, actually, because, you know, I saw a clip of Gareth Southgate, the manager, you know, and he was talking about how, you know, if the players did decide to, you know, to walk out of the game sort of thing, if racism was there, if it was, you know, if they were being subjected to abuse, that, you know, that they basically would be fired or whatever. And I just thought, I was kind of not surprised, obviously, because that's how racism operates. But the whole thing around black people being used as a pawn for white people to do their, for white supremacy to do their bidding, it's just the same conversation playing itself out. I didn't hear any just from my own social media and stuff. I didn't see any people sort of, you know, playing the kumbaya card about diversity and whatnot. I mean, there was genuine fear from some of the players about the abuse. I mean, I can't remember the guy's name. There was one of them that was saying that he told his family not to travel over there because he was worried about his family being abused. So he told his family not to come with him. And that was really, that was hard to hear. And even though, you know, Gareth Southgate was saying about how, you know, the players have got my support and all the rest of it. And I think eventually the, you know, FIFA did actually say that they would give the referees power to actually stop the game if there was racist abuse. It would have been interesting to see if they would have actually done it. You know, if the abuse was like, you know, if the abuse was there, then would they have actually followed it through? What would have happened? So, yeah, I found it, you know, I mean, I wasn't surprised, but again, I just found it incredibly sad that these guys, you know, they're great at what they do, but it's just another example of black people being used, you know, for white people to, you know, to do what they want to do. And that you know, they're just not supported. They're just not supported in these games. And it's just, some of the fines as well that have been dishing out have been ridiculous. You know, black people are just being used again. Yeah, they're just being used. And it's just, yeah. It's hard to watch. I find it, I don't know anybody else, but I find it really painful to watch this stuff. Because it's so, you know, their family, they're worried about their families and, you know, it's just hard for them to just do what they absolutely love doing, what they're doing. But, you know, the consequences of being involved in these things, as we all are under, you know, if we work for white people, we all have to be, you know, we're all subject to white supremacy, you know, in the work that we do. And it's just, it was really hard to watch the, these guys go through this thing, you know, around football. And I just think they're just not getting the support that they need. And I don't think, to be honest with you, I don't think it's going to be any different, because at the end of the day, they want the black bodies because they know they're good. They know they're good, but they're just not being protected. They're not being respected. And I just think it's very hard. It's very hard, you know. And if it ever becomes like a, you know, Colin Kaepernick situation, then they'd probably be out. They'd probably treat them the same as they did with him in the States, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of my thought on it. On the World Cup stuff. But it's very difficult to watch. Very, very difficult to watch.
JuneAllen.net. For a comment, and you were mentioning Danny Rose, who is a black male. He's on the football team. For the English team, there was a report in the Sydney Morning Herald. This came out just a few weeks back. England have World Cup racism plan. Rose tells family to stay home. I'm not going to read the whole article, but just a little portion to support what we just heard from June. It reads, the players, like everyone else, don't really know what to expect, Rose said. We have had conversations explaining that. We are hopeful that it will go well, but we are having conversations in case racism happens. We have a plan in place. We have personal support, team support, and official protocol in place, Southgate told a news conference. That's the manager. Rose, who suffered personal racial abuse when he played for England's under-21s in Serbia in 2012, told the Evening Standard, I've told my family I don't want them going out there because of racism and anything else that may happen. Southgate, the manager, said that players and staff have discussed the issue but suggested that if there were incidents, leaving the field was not likely to be an option. I'll stop there.
Exactly.
They did not go into detail about what the exact protocol is if an incident of racism should happen to the family, players, whatever it is. They didn't go into any of those details, but that alone. And again, just to emphasize, I mean, if it's that bad where I can't even have, this is one of the biggest tournaments in the world. Everybody, are they paying attention to the World Cup at all in Nigeria? Or, because I was about to say they're watching this everywhere, but maybe they're not. Is the World Cup, is that?
Yeah, Nigeria. Nigeria was in the World Cup. Nigeria got dumped out of the competition quite early on. But yeah, we did qualify. We've qualified for every World Cup since our first one in 1994 in the USA, actually. It's been here. I mean, I watched the final this evening with my dad. But what I wanted to say, actually, just to kind of add on to what June's just said about Danny Rose and just in the racism general in Russia, again, I always come back to this. Everything that these Western or like British white people accuse the Russians of, they have it as well in Britain. You know, like Raheem Sterling, the guy, if he buys himself a packet of tissue to use in the toilet, they make a report about it, saying that look what this rich guy is spending his money on. Is he not promoting violence by spending money on tissue? Because why is he buying tissues from? They just concoct a story, you know, and just before the World Cup, they were giving him grief about the fact that he got a tattoo of a gun on his leg, and then they kind of extrapolated from that to say that he's encouraging gun violence in the UK by getting a tattoo of a gun on his right leg, and he had to come out to say there was a deeper symbolism in him getting a gun on his leg because he uses his right foot to shoot to strike the ball, and so that's the symbolism for him in getting a gun, in getting a tattoo of a gun, and that his father was actually killed as a result of gun violence in Jamaica as a child. So he made a vow to kind of not get involved in any form of violence. How can they say such a thing about him? Can you believe that when he made the statement about to basically defend his reasons for getting the tattoo, when Sky Sports News, which is like one of the largest news sports news TV channels in the UK, when they reported it, they basically misquoted what he said to basically give the impression that he used to be involved in gun violence, but now he's stopped being involved in gun violence. I mean, it's just ridiculous what they've done to him. And it's not just him. I believe that the way they treated Raheem Sterling, not just with this World Cup, but in relation to his whole career in general, is similar to how like the white people in Cleveland treated LeBron James when he left the basketball team in Cleveland. You know, people kind of seen Raheem Sterling as their personal slave. How dare he leave Liverpool for Manchester City? Like, does he not know that he owes us his life? You know, like we plucked him from Queen's Park Rangers when his career was going nowhere, and we brought him all the way to Merseyside, and now he's doing well in his career and he wants to dump us. Who the hell does he think he is? Like, you know, like, so he's basically been the guy who's been like, they basically have his face with a target around, a target on his forehead, and they just keep taking shots at him. Whenever England don't do well, they criticize Raheem Sterling. You know, whenever England do well, they still find a way to criticize Raheem Sterling. You know, and what I'm saying now is more directed at the English press in general, the media in England, but also just white people in general, because they're the ones who consume the news that these people produce, that the English press produces, and the English press knows that there's a huge viable market for that kind of news. When it comes to sports, you know, they want the black scapegoat, you know, that they can pin all their, you know, phobias and frustrations on. I mean, the game that England played, the semi-final of the competition that England played, Harry Kane, the great white hope, you know, of English football, Harry Kane had a last minute chance to either score, but I actually believe that he had a better chance of squaring the ball to Raheem Sterling, who would have just passed it into an empty net. But instead, he decided to be selfish and tried to score, and the keeper saved it. Nobody said anything about Harry Kane costing England a chance to be in the World Cup final for the first time since 1966. Nobody criticized him. Nobody criticized him for being selfish. Nobody criticized him for missing the chance. It's just, well done, mate, and better luck next time. At least you got the golden boot. You know, you're the highest goal scorer in the competition anyway. You know, you're basically the great white British hope. So you can't do no wrong, you know. But at the same time, the black players, especially Raheem Sterling, was getting, you know, crap thrown at them, you know. So, that's just my... I know that the Russians are racist, but the English are just as racist. You know, you're just as racist, so, yeah.
Frank joining us live from Nigeria. Was that Mr. Fox? Was that trying to pick out? Maybe not. Did either Mr. Fox or Mary, did you all have commentary on the World Cup, England's involvement in the Cup, either the black players, the racism that they experienced, or any other observations from what happened with the World Cup this week?
Yeah, could I just quickly add to what Frank said about when Harry Kane didn't pass to Raheem?
Proceed, Mary.
Okay, they still criticised Raheem for something that had nothing to do with him. They still found a way to criticise him by saying, oh, he could have done this, he could have done that, nothing about Harry Kane. But, I mean, the World Cup to me is farcical. I would very much love to see a time where none of the black players play for any European countries and they play a cup just for Africa. They would beat everyone into the ground. I would love to see that day. And I just want to add that back to Raheem Sterling, what's very, very telling is that his partner is black, and the way that they've trashed this young man and trashed his woman in the news is very, very telling about she doesn't look a certain way and all of that type of thing. To me, that's a direct attack on the black family, because when these black players... unfortunately match up with white women, there's nothing said because they understand that the money is going to come back to them. So they're really trying to destroy this young man, and I think that basically they're really trying to break him. And they tried that with I think it was Sturridge a couple of years ago, and he put them right in their place, and they've... To the best of my knowledge, I'm not really a football follower. They've stopped attacking him, so he's a new person that they're attacking. And I really wish he hadn't explained that gun on his leg. He owes them no explanations. He's not there to do anything but play a game and protect himself. And those are my thoughts.
Much obliged, Mary. Mr. Fox, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I could just have to add that I'm extremely happy that England didn't win the World Cup, because if they did, the amount of gloating and savagery which we would have seen and witnessed would have been on a different level. The English team was terrible. The English team's been terrible for a very long time, and every tournament they go in, extremely high expectations, no football fundamentals, to just way behind when it comes to any other country in Europe, but because they think they created the sport of football, that they can't take advice and they don't like to take anyone else's formula about how football is played and try and improve it and make it, you know, work for the English themselves. So they're a terrible side. I'm glad they lost. They should have went out a lot earlier, but the fact that they got to the semi-finals was pretty scary. So I was pretty nervous, and I'm just glad Croatia actually put them to the sword and they went home empty-handed, not even getting the bronze medal in the third place slot. Regarding Russians, Russians and Slavs, they're very unrefined when it comes to the practice of racism, white supremacy. They're kind of like how the British were when you had the, you know, black people from Jamaica and West Africa and Asians from India coming over to this country straight after World War II. They're kind of on that level still when it comes to their racism. But because the English are so refined in the practice of racism, white supremacy, they've moved on to practice racism in a different way. Because as we saw with the England side, we have at least, I think, four of the English players who have white parents. And I think there's about three or four black players. And I think probably one of them, I think Sterling's partner, she looks mixed to me. I won't say she's a black person. She looks like she might have a white parent somewhere. But majority of the black players, especially in the Premier League, as you will know from previous programs, have white partners. But how Sterling has been treated is, from what I have seen, is this classical, you know, refined and unrefined racism, white supremacy being practiced in this country. But in the English like to point to other people how, you know, they're racist, like when the Spanish were behaving in a certain way, well, being racist a couple of years ago when they were making monkey chants, then the English were quick to point fingers at them because they used to do that in the 80s and early 70s. They don't do that no more. It's not really seen or heard in large, you know, done by large crowds of football supporters in this country. You get your odd incident, but if you're, from what I've been told, if you're in the stands, you do hear it from certain sections, but if you're watching it on TV, you won't hear, you know, large portions of a football crowd making the monkey chants, which they did when John Barnes was playing back in the, you know, the 80s. So England don't practice that kind of racism in football, but places in Europe and, you know, Israel and Slavic countries, Spain, Portugal, you will have that still. So the English like to point fingers and say, well, we're not like that. We've moved on from that now. But it's all the same. It's all about how racism is actually practiced. And, you know, Slavs practice, you know, the old school racism, which the English have moved on from. But I know, I think his name's Danny Rose. I think his family actually did come out a couple of days after because there were no incidents which I heard of, or I didn't do much looking for it, but nothing popped up regarding any incidents which happened during the World Cup. I think there was a incident with the French team during a warm-up session, but I think because the Russians themselves, like, you know, Putin knows that it is, you know, you have a lot of far-right parties in Russia and this is a big stage, so I reckon he told a lot of them to calm it down because a lot of these games were like in there was certain parts of, you know, obscure parts of Russia. You know, I think the final might have been played in Moscow or St. Petersburg. I'm not too sure where the final was played, but there was no, like, it looked like more of a family kind of event. You had a lot of Russians in there, but who they gave their tickets to, I don't think you would have had a lot of the hardcore kind of nationalists in there. During the Russian game would have been different, but Russia wasn't playing a non-white team. They were playing another Slavic team, which were the Croats, but you didn't hear or see any incidents of racism, white supremacy being, you know, displayed by the Russians in its most unrefined form. So regarding racism during the World Cup, I think, you know, as a lot of English people will put it, it was a success in that because they were expecting the worst, but nothing like that actually turned up.
Hello, can I just quickly say something?
Oh, Frank, go ahead.
Yeah, so in terms of any kind of news of overt racism, Nigeria was in the same group as Croatia, this year's finalists, and when we played our first game, which was against Croatia, subsequently after the game, FIFA was said to be investigating some claims that some parts of the Croatian crowd was making a racist chant towards the Nigerian team as well as spectators in the stadium. And this was our first game. This was very, very early on in the competition, like 2 days, 3 days into the competition when we played, and that happened. And just to kind of, you know, just to kind of buttress what Mr. Fox just said about the openness about the racism of the Slavs and the Russians. I remember, I think a year ago, Jamie Fox was filming in Dubrovnik in Croatia, and two men came up to him in a restaurant. He was filming for he was playing a role in the film, which has been filmed in Croatia. And he was in a restaurant, and two men came up to him and called him a name which I can't pronounce, but it translates as nigger. And for me, what was interesting about them calling him that in Croatia is that ostensibly Croatia did not enslave black people or did not colonize any black countries. However, they have a word in their language that means nigger, but doesn't sound like it's derivative of the English or Spanish or sorry, English or Latinized term nigger or negro. Am I making sense? Because it doesn't sound like they said something. It doesn't sound like they said nigger in a Croatian accent. It's a different word, and I don't know how to pronounce it because it doesn't sound phonetic the way an English word would sound. It's a Croatian term. And he was called that term. If anyone wants to search for it on Google, they will find it. It will be the first thing. Just type in Jamie Foxx racially abused in Croatia, and it will come up. So yeah, that's the Croatians for you. So I was happy that the Croatians knocked the English out, but you know, I know that they're just as bad as the English when it comes to how they view people like me or people that look like me. So
I posted.
Yeah, I think that's. Sorry, I think that term's called Senkruka. CRNCUGA. That is a term for.
That's it.
Yeah, Senkruka, I think it's pronounced. I'm doing the translation in the audio form, and that's what it sounds like, Senkruka. But what you. A lot of these Mediterranean / Slavic countries, they always been, you know, fighting the Ottoman Turks, and the Ottoman Turks had a lot of African soldiers in their ranks. So to this day, you have a lot of these countries who have a deep down resentment. I don't know if it's either through that or just to them just being, you know, racist, white supremacist, Slavic in the truest form. But even if you go to Malta today, if you went to Malta, they will call us Turkish.
Wow. I posted the BBC's report on Jamie Foxx being subjected to this terrorist abuse in Croatia. Folks can check it out. This happened in 2017, not ancient history. The person that called in, last four digits, 6260. Did you have a question for any of our international participants? Last four digits?
No, I didn't have any questions.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Gus and family. This is Justin Mania. I just wanted to thank the guests for coming on the station today. And basically, it's just uniting. It's just like the United Compensatory Code in action. You're able to see that we're all going through the same thing, no matter where we're at, all over the globe. And I agree with the guests that... with the whole Trump thing going over to Europe, it's basically, I believe that they're all in cahoots together. They're all on the same page, and they're just, you know, in front of the audience, they may act like they disagree, but they are practicing, they show us that they're all on the same page and they're doing the same. They are all practicing white supremacy, racism. And also, I thought it was kind of funny what Mr. Fox said that that Trump, when he was walking, I think it was Mr. Fox that said it, that Trump was walking in front of the Queen. I'm like, well, that's what he does here in America with his wife also. So I just thought that was pretty funny also. And to the guest, June, I would like to say thank you so much. I have been listening to your to you on YouTube, and I have been incorporating some of the things that you have discussed on your channel. I have supported you in your efforts with your some of your book. I think one of your books that you have online, and it is very important for us to have self-esteem when dealing with white supremacy, racism, because as you was stated, it this system has a tendency to eradicate our self-esteem and our self-respect. So that's all I have to say. And I'm in my line.
Much obliged. Draptomania, JuneAllen.net. Visit the website. I was going to check in. I said that earlier, but I didn't do it. If you all had other topics, questions, suggestions that you wanted to make sure that you share, if it's something you want us to be mindful about, Mary, Mr. Fox, Frank, did I miss somebody? I feel like I'm missing one. June, did any of y'all have any other subjects that you wanted to make sure that we touched on?
Can I ask what I missed in the beginning, please?
This is Mary. Let's see. We started June, Frank. We talked about President Trump's visit. Frank is in Nigeria, so President Trump's visit is not the pressing news of the day in his part of the world. So he gave what I thought was a fascinating explanation that kind of involves some of the history of white terrorism in Nigeria, and how that has manifested in the current misconduct, I would call it, of the black people in Nigeria and how they treat each other, and talking about even white supremacy in the language. He didn't say the term, but he said that the word in his language for police, it translates to man with a stick, because racists in Nigeria did not want to give black police officers guns, so they gave them sticks. And he says that's still the word that's used, even though now they have AK-47s. And he was just talking about the ubiquitous violence in how black people treat each other in that part of the world, and explaining how all of that relates to racism, white supremacy. I think when he was explaining that, that was the point that you and Mr. Fox joined the call, so you should be up to date.
Okay, thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
Something will come to mind, so maybe if someone else says something.
Something that I just remembered now is just going back to the World Cup again, is it's just the commentary, commentators, and just the casual usage of the word fast and powerful to describe black players, or either African players or black players of African descent playing for European teams, or like the Brazilian or like South American teams. Constant usage of power and pace. There was no reference to their technical ability in terms of like how they use their brains to like maneuver their way around the pitch. No, that was restricted to just the white players. But the constant usage of power and pace, just like brute force, and just, you know, just the reference to brute force on the part of the Africans was especially the Senegalese team when they defeated Poland. The Senegalese team was they're such a skillful team, such a well organized team, but the best adjectives that could be used to describe them was power and pace. And in fact, if you watch the game against Poland, it was actually the Polish that were relying more on power and pace to try to defeat the Senegalese. You know, so yeah, that was another observation. Just the kind of like, I mean, that's not overtly racist. Like, you know, it's not like they're calling them monkeys or calling them niggers, but it's that kind of subtle white supremacy, you know, refined white supremacy that's just there, you know, from the commentary, as well, you know. So yeah, that's what I wanted to say. That's what I remembered to say. So, yeah.
Could I just quickly just mention two things?
Proceed, Mary.
Sorry to hog the time, but number one is pedosexuality and the rife problem that you have in the States of white people white peopling by just calling the police for just ridiculous things. So, you know, selling water while black, walking while black, using a coupon while black. It's just ridiculous. Those are my observations of things that have been emerging so far. And I think with the pedosexuality thing, it's going to go hand in hand with the amount of black people that go missing across the globe. And it's going to directly affect our children the most, because I noted in America that children are being harmed in daycare. One baby having been beat up, his 1 year old. They said a 2 year old did it, which is clearly a lie. An adult beat that child. And the other one where I saw it today, where a baby had a hole in the middle of her forehead, and the mother was saying that she could see her baby's skull, and that happened in daycare. So those are the two things that I'm seeing coming up, and they go hand in hand to me. The abuse of black children, Charlize Theron being one, a major abuser who's in front of the world trying to turn out a young black child who was tragically adopted by her, babies being cooked in cars, the list goes on. So I've noted the major attack that's happening against black women and children, because the warrior class, which is black males, have been decimated by white supremacy.
Well, appreciate that, Mary. Those transracial adoptions, I had the sound clipped in my head. Black babies cost less. No value for the lives of any black people, black children included. Was anybody else thought that they wanted to get in? I know Serena Williams was, everything was happening in England this week, or lots of things were going down. They had Wimbledon the past few weeks as well. Serena Williams lost in the final, but the doping scandal was kind of a big deal in the middle of all that as well. The news coming out that Serena Williams has been drug tested more than any of her peers in the Women's Tennis Association, and they didn't really have a reasonable explanation for this. Did that break out and become big news over there, or were people not really paying attention to that?
I mean, from what I saw, it wasn't massive news, but I did see, you know, there were reports about it, and she clearly was not happy about it. But yeah, it wasn't as big as it could be. And obviously, you know, maybe because it's they didn't really want to blow that up too much. They just wanted to kind of focus on, you know, on the game and whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's just, she didn't even realize that was going on, which was disgusting. But not a surprise. They don't want to believe that somebody could be that talented. They don't want to believe that this black woman can be that talented that she's going to need drugs to obviously perform the way that she's performed. And the woman's just had a baby. So the fact that she's as amazing as she is, so close to you know, having a baby, they just can't believe that somebody could be that brilliant. So, yeah, I mean, she's handled it, you know, well. She's obviously said that she's not happy about it, but she hasn't got a problem with being tested, because she thinks, obviously, to keep make sure the game is fair and all the rest of it. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they come... I mean, this be under investigation at the moment, so I'm really interested to see what they come back and say to her about it, what the investigation is going to say. But, you know, when they say, oh, it's under investigation, is that not just code for just make it go away? Because when white people say that it's under investigation, you quite often don't hear anything else about it, or it just, you know... It doesn't really get there's not a lot of follow through. Well, maybe it's not reported, so we don't really hear. We don't always hear what the outcome of this is going to be. So I'm just really interested to see how it's going to play itself out. But yeah, it is disgusting. But I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that they're doing that to her, because, you know, she's amazing, and they want to fight, you know. They would be rubbing their hands together. If ever that was negative, oh my God, they would be rubbing their hands together. They would love that it came back positive. So you know, good for her that it hasn't come back positive. So yeah, I'm interested to see how it turns out. So yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that.
Mm-hmm. I'm reminded we had a report on the compensatory call in yesterday evening, where, and it was talking about Seattle, no less, people would write reports about misconduct for King County enforcement officials. Seattle is Seattle, where I'm at, is in King County, Washington. So it was hundreds of these reports that, you know, people were reporting wrongdoing, officers were being abusive, some sexual misconduct in some of the reports. And they said that hundreds of these reports, they just basically threw them in the trash. They didn't even go through the process. They just found this out. They said yesterday when White said, oh, yes, we take it seriously. We're going to have an investigation and we're going to check out everything. Yeah. Like most of the time, as soon as they finish that sentence, oh, yeah, we're going to take this seriously and investigate. That's about the end of whatever it's going to be. If it relates to Black people being harmed, mistreated, them practicing white supremacy. Either one. You could take either one. You can watch what happens with this investigation. In fact, with that, what I would expect to happen is by the time they finish, we're going to investigate and see what happened. By the way, we got this cup here. I think we're going to need a urine sample before your next match, Miss Williams. That's about. And I think that's how this story broke, was that they were going to drug test her again and she wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And it became, I think that's how all this came out, that they were coming to drug test her again. So that's about what I would expect in the system of white supremacy. So anywho, this is not our normal. This is supposed to be our 90 minute. We started a half hour early so that I could conclude at 1 for my time. 1, I think, for the folks in the UK, 9. I'm not sure about Nigeria, but we will be here Thursday, workplace racism, normal time. We might even have Stacey joining us, as she usually is from the UK. Always a pleasure to have all of our international listeners on the broadcast. I think it just it's invaluable in terms of studying white supremacy, racism as a system, and really all of us keeping in the forefront of our mind, this is a global problem. Whites are thinking globally about dominating every single non-white person on the planet. That's the way that they have organized their system. Our counter system should keep that in mind, that this is a global problem, a global system that needs to be dismantled. But we will look forward to having you all back with us next month, third Sunday in August. That would be August 19th. In fact, I think my teacher training will be wrapping up then, so we might be able to have all of the programs back at normal time. We'll have to check and see. But either way, August 19th will be our next Global Sunday Talk on Racism. Much obliged to Mr. Fox, Frank, June Allen at juneallen.net, and Mary for joining us live. I hope it was a worthy investment of your Sunday evenings. For folks in the States, thanks for listening as well, or wherever you happen to be listening from. Much obliged for listening in. If you have questions or gripes, untiljustice@gmail.com. Wherever you are in the world, I would strongly encourage sobriety. We have enough problems wherever we are. Let's keep our brain computers working efficiently. We do not need any of White's toxins, poisons, to further corrupt our brains, damage our mental health, self-esteem. Dr. Welsing would certainly co-sign on that one. If we're out and about in a vehicle, in addition to being sober, let's make sure that we are buckled up. Let's do everything that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, the man with the stick. Badge or no. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.